Broadcast Network, AfterBuzz TV, over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to The 100... Season 2, Episode 10, Survival of the Fittest AfterBuzz After Show.
Yeah, big time.
And if you haven't done it already, please make sure to like, subscribe, comment, and all that. You can find us on AfterBuzzTV.com and also on iTunes and SoundCloud and YouTube. All the places you want to be, we are. And joining me today, me being Tari J. Miller, is Alexis Torres.
Hi, guys. I missed everybody. I did.
Very special guest, Ricky Whittle.
Whoop. Hell yeah.
Yeah. And, as always, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? How's it going? Excited to be here, as always.
And while we're doing the panel, you can keep track of us on social media, specifically Twitter. We're going to give out our Twitter handles in just a second. And you can also, we'll be following the hashtag ABTVThe100. Mm. All right, starting at the end, since we started over here, Ben Bateman, what's your Twitter?
Ben Bateman Media.
All right, Ricky, sir?
Mr. Ricky Whittle.
Nice. Alexis?
A Torres 890.
Cool. And you can find me at Tari J. That's TauriJay. All right, guys, so let's get general thoughts about the episode.
First of all, I almost want to just talk in his accent, because I was like, send my Twitter handle, and he says hit. I was like, gosh.
At least you went first.
Right?
Yeah, well, anyway, that was a great episode. That was really exciting.
It was.
That was awesome.
Oh, you're just saying it because I'm here, right?
I feel like we say that every episode, yeah, but this
one... You do.
One...
You do. I'm joking.
It gets better and better, yeah. Seems so good. That was a really sad ending, really tragic.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah. Heartbreaking ending.
I mean, but that's what keeps you coming back, though,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
Totally.
Real. It was real, you know. That's what we kind of wanted to establish and when we were on the show, that drugs is a real problem, you know. And I know we pitched the show as sci-fi, and there's a lot of stuff that's out there, and we have creative, you know, artistic license and things. But, mm-hmm. You know, I remember sitting down with Jason Rothenberg, our producer, saying that, you know, this is something that we need to stay true to. You know, a lot of TV shows kind of brush things under the carpet, mm-hmm. and you're healed in an episode. But you know, I think we just saw today that, you know, drugs is a real problem, and that's something we're trying to respect and stay true to.
Yeah,
yeah.
And the fans appreciate it.
Yeah,
like, I think that's what people really like is the realism of this show and how like all the characters are affected in a way that is relatable. And also, I mean, even though they're in this land that we are not familiar with personally, they can still connect to each of these different characters.
Yeah. I mean, Lincoln's, you know, one of the strongest characters out there for moral compass and for believing in right and wrong. And there you have this really strong, good, pure character succumb to his addiction.
Drug addiction.
Yeah. It's very real. And, you know, all credit to our writers and Jason for putting it out there and showing it's a real problem that hopefully, you know, can hit a few places, you know, out there and, you know, make people more aware of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was a very serious tone to a very exciting episode. It's a serious tone to end it. But
right.
Where do we start with it? What was the
first? We'll just start with some Camp Jaha stuff.
Okay.
So, I mean, we have the grounders marching in there, mm-hmm. and even all of the campers are like, who are
right.
these people?
Yeah.
They're going to take over as soon as they get here. And there's friction from the very beginning.
Yeah. Which, so, I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off
no,
there.
Go for it.
I just, it was kind of nice to see how, because we're usually never really in Camp Jaha, really, when it comes to all the grounder stuff. It's usually always outside the fence. So I really like seeing the reaction of the fact of just like, they're in our camp now.
Right.
What are we supposed to do?
Like
I don't know how I feel
us,
about it. Yeah. So it was kind of nice to see that. And also, like, obviously, which is a little bit later on, is seeing how their training is different from how Kane treat all the guards are training with the guns and targets and stuff like that. So I really like that you can really tell the difference in how like they look like barbarians, which that's what they are, but it really points them out.
I love we talked about this last week a lot. Indra and Lexa are like two of my current favorite characters. Mm-hmm. And Indra just struts around camp from the second she walks in. Like, she's just owns the place. Is she pretty intimidating on set in real life?
Adina is possibly the nicest woman you have ever met. That goes to show what an incredible actress she is. I mean, from The Walk, you know, her strutting down that corridor with Kane, you know, mm-hmm. Henry Ian Cusack. You know, she's really engulfed in this character from mm-hmm. the way she speaks, the way she holds herself, the way she walks. You know, she's ferocious as Indra. And, you know, like I say, off camera, she's absolutely all smiles. She's an inspirational woman. I love her to death. And, you know, long may she continue doing what she does. She's fantastic.
I can't even imagine seeing those pearly whites because I'm so used to her just like scowling at the camera. Yeah. So it would be weird to see her like, and cut. Okay, who wants to get donuts? Like something like that, you know?
We're going
to
see her in like some like interview panel and she's going to be wearing like a nice dress and all done up. And she's going to be laughing.
And she looks good as well. She's a beautiful woman. Once we all get home, I mean, I've never felt so clean. It feels so good to wrap. You know, the cast are always walking around in Vancouver and like, you know, restaurants and bars will look at you as if you're like, you know, some filthy, rotten thing because it's, you know, they really dig the dirt into your nails and in every crevice. I mean, I will shower 2-3 times and still find dirt just coming down off out of nowhere. I'm like, I'm clean. Where possibly could there be any more dirt? But, you know, it comes from somewhere. They really get it in there. And so, like, you know, it's nice to finally wrap and actually be clean. So I'm sure the girls are happy to have their mani-pedis and, you know, not get all that grease and stuff out of their hair now, finally. But,
Yeah, that was going to be my question, was just like the costuming in the show is just fantastic. Like, so we talk about it every episode.
Katya and her team are incredible. The worlds they've created just in, you know, visual worlds, in just in clothing. Mm-hmm. I think we've touched upon the Ice Nation now, mm-hmm. Who we will see in the future. The different clans of Grounders, the different, you know, Arca's security. There's a whole world of costume there that Katya's created, and the, you know, the team that she's got working behind closed doors. The sheer volume of costumes. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the show started with the 100, so already you need 100. You know, outfits there, and then as we're kind of expanding this world, and we're kind of meeting new clans and new areas. You know, they're having to think up new things and running them by Jason and you know, it's just growing and growing and growing, and literally every department is just, you know, working its tail off, and we are blessed with an incredible crew and incredible departments, you know, from, you know, our costume and what makeup are doing, you know. So if you see all these characters when they're not in full fatigues and all this business, you'll be surprised. I remember walking down the high street in Vancouver, and I apologize, I am so sorry. But what this guy, this guy just came up to me, just walked past me and said, "Hey, Lincoln." I was like, "Hey, how you doing? You're right." Yeah. And I carried on walking because I was shopping, I was doing my thing, and it happens, you know, some fans say hi. Literally 4-5 seconds walking down the street, I was like, "Oh, he works on the show.
Oh.
he's one of the Grounders." But literally, he's got face tattoos, he's got fake long hair extensions, he's muddied up, but I didn't recognize him because he's a good looking dude, all clean and smiley. He's, "Hey, Lincoln." I'm like, "Hey, enjoy your day." And I carried on, and literally 4 seconds later, I was like, "Oh."
Did you run after him, or did you just...
No, I apologized. I apologized when I got to work and I saw him next. But yes, it's tough to tell, you know, how people really look without all our fantastic departments doing their magic.
How long does it take to do like all the tattoos? And I mean, for you it's a little bit different, but I mean, I know for everybody else.
For me, it's different. I mean, it can take, you know, for myself, whenever Lincoln's shirt is off, that's a 6-7 hour process.
We've talked about it a lot. Tattoos.
That's you know, his body's a roadmap of scars and battles, mm-hmm. and right. so like yeah. literally, I'll come in first thing in the morning with Tanya, and my incredible makeup. She's the head of the department, and you know, then I'll see, you know, other random grounders come in and reapers and stuff. And then, you know, Bob or Marie will come in and they'll pop in, do their 30 minutes of hair and a little bit of spray, a little bit of dirt and stuff. And like, anyway, I'll see you on set, Ricky. And I'm like, yeah, okay.
It's like six, seven hours. Like,
I'll see you later. Three more hours to go.
Oh my God.
It's nuts, you know, but I mean, it takes a lot, you know.
Yeah.
It's a machine, and you know, we don't just, you know, walk around looking like that. They really do put it in, and we, like I say, we're very blessed with an incredible team.
I was just curious. I just wanted to know, because I mean, it's well done when you see it on camera. So I was like, it must take forever to get that done.
It does,
so.
But we're getting quicker now.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay, that's good.
Like, I think we could possibly get Lincoln shirtless down to 4 hours.
Wow.
So, you know, she's knocked off a couple of hours there. You know? Now she knows what she's doing. She knows the placement of all the tattoos. You know, even I do the chest tattoo every now and then as well. She lets me do that.
Nice.
As long as I don't mess it up. Yeah. You know.
Well, it's less common. You have your shirt on more often season two.
I've been,
I bet
I've
you the
been
fans
so
are so
happy.
Upset.
I haven't. Myself and Tanya been really happy, because then, you know, 7 hours of makeup before you start work is intense. And plus, you know, it's nice that, you know, this season it's really been about, you know, the work, you know. I mean not that the first season wasn't, you know, he just happened to be topless for a lot of it.
They've opened your character up like a whole lot. So we open after we get Indra and she's strutting down the hallway. We kind of run into Jaha and he's sour grapes a little bit. He's a little bit like, is this gonna end badly? I know how this is gonna go. You know, basically we're gonna die here, we're gonna die here. And I was thinking, his sour grapes attitude, that's like, it's that standard kind of stuff that we get from the show where we're like, oh, this is really obvious. But now I'm learning it's the opposite is usually what ends up happening, or something that you totally don't expect. So what do we think is going to happen here? I mean, do we think he's right? Because they did a whole number on Jaha's character this episode.
They did.
A whole crazy direction.
Which I liked, because I felt like we were talking about it last week that, you know, we don't really get much of Jaha anymore throughout the season, besides, you know, he's always captured and then he's free and then he's captured and then he's free. So with this one, it feels like that's what it feels like. I don't know if I'm the only one, and I apologize if that's what it is, but that's what it just every single time he gets on camera, he's either in chains, bloody, or he's walking around.
Well, I really like
his hands behind his back.
I really like, because it feels like often with Jaha, we've said this before, they give him this really predictable, altruistic kind of vibe where he's like, I'm going to sacrifice myself for the people.
Yeah.
I'm going to sacrifice myself for the people, and does it over and over again.
Right.
This episode, they were just like, he's like, you know what? I guess I'm kind of a villain. I kind of need to reinvent myself and get forgiveness. There was a lot of forgiveness theme in this episode.
Which I liked that one, too.
Which was nice. It was good to see. It actually made his character a little more interesting to watch, as opposed to, like you said, just the kind of, I'm captured and I'm annoyed, but I'm altruistic. That's like the three notes we usually
get.
Well,
I still felt like it was in the same vein, because ultimately, Jaha, the core of his character is to do something for the greater good. And he said it many times throughout the episode, you know, this is for the greater good.
And
he has a point. Like, it's shown when Kane, at the end of the episode, tries to get Octavia to spy. Spoiler.
Yeah.
I know, right?
He essentially echoes Jaha's concerns, because it is a big issue that these grounders outnumber them by the thousands, and they have no way to defend themselves. And so what does happen to the Alliance when they are not striving for the same purpose?
Of course, I'm always hoping that it's like, okay, we found our common goal, we go through the mission, if it's successful, great. If it isn't, obviously, then I think it will be a little bit more high-strung after that. But I feel, I mean, not to get too much into predictions, but I do feel like something's going to go wrong and it's just going to ruin everything, personally. And then if it does go well, I feel like they are going to take over the camp, because they're like, well, there's not that much of you. And I mean, it would be kind of strange to see the grounders take over, because I feel like they don't need the Ark, you know? Like, there's really nothing they need that's in there. But at the same time, I can't see them missing the opportunity to take over.
You haven't really, I was going to say, you haven't really interacted with Jaha's character in the show very much. You guys really haven't had a lot of screen time together.
And that's something I'm so upset by, because I have been a fan of Isaiah Washington
since
his Grey's Anatomy days. Like, this guy is, for me, just has presence. It's just in the makeup chair, just chilling with his eyes closed. I'm still in awe of this man. The first time I met him, I was at, it was in the hotel that we were staying at in the first season, because obviously our characters never ever met. We were never in the same days, never mind the same scenes. So we kind of just passing ships in the night, and I bumped into him, and literally we just dropped straight into like a father son dynamic. You know,
I was
like, he is an incredible man. Like, intelligence, passion, he is just like an incredible human being. You know, the stuff that he does off camera is probably by far more incredible than what he does on camera. You mm-hmm. know, he's affiliated with so many charities, and he's fighting Ebola and really putting numerous things together regarding that and other charities. And then on screen, I mean, you saw him working with Richard Harmon, who plays Murphy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you're seeing a new dynamic there of two kind of anti-heroes, if you will, kind of looking out for themselves. You mm-hmm. know, they've been turned upon by their own people in prison, as Jaha said, and now they're off on their own.
Forgiveness. That's the theme. We're about to see their thing, their journey.
And I'm really glad that they decided to give them kind of some sort of comparison and kind of some common interest. And I really liked their kind of their relationship together, because I never
fantastic chemistry.
Yeah, I never thought about putting Murphy and Jaha together ever.
He calls him John. We haven't heard anything. You were going crazy. You were like, "Who's this John? Who's we ever heard?" He's like, occasionally it's like John Murphy, but I feel like that's like the name John has been said in the show like three times in two seasons.
Right. I don't even remember that.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe this is the first one.
I love those little touches, I've got numerous friends that I still don't know their real names. I'll be like, "Well, it's Simo, isn't it? Simo. You mean Dave? Who's Dave?" but I like those little touches that Jaha would.
It gave it a father.
Address him as John.
So here's a question for you guys. When they're going over their thing, and he's like, "I knew your father," and he tells the story about the meds and stealing it. Now, I remember that Murphy told a story to Raven about, it's the same story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't remember it that clearly. Do you guys notice there were differences in details? Was he like maybe lying to Raven to some degree to make himself look better? Or it was the same story?
I believe it was the same story.
Yeah, I feel like it was the same story. I don't remember mm-hmm. there being much difference.
Yeah.
I mean, if there was, I just assume that maybe he just doesn't remember it as well.
Yeah, Murphy's only had the addition of his mother's perspective, where she started resenting him and mm-hmm. being abusive from that point.
Yeah.
So, okay, but so he talks about his dad stole the drugs because he was sick. Yeah. So his dad mm-hmm. gets floated.
Yeah.
And then, but how does Murphy get in trouble on the arc? What does he do?
I think he was just doing petty thefts, wasn't he?
Was that
it? I believe so.
I can't remember.
I feel like maybe he said that he got in trouble for the drugs or something like that. Maybe I'm wrong.
I mean,
I'm
sure. We'll someone, let, yeah. Jill.
Let me know, because I don't even know. I'm going to have to go back and watch the season.
Yeah, I don't remember. I have to look into
pull
that.
Out my scripts.
Did you guys find it interesting that Jaha, like, they gave him a little bit of a villain role? He was like, as Murphy was talking to him and saying, "You've done all these things and you've killed all these people, essentially, mm-hmm. and there's all these kids that just resent you because you just killed their parents," were you sort of like, "Oh man, Jaha kind of he's kind of a dick, I guess"? Like, I mean, maybe he was doing what he had to do, but like,
again, it's perspective.
Yeah,
I mean, it's you can only please some of the people some of the time, and at the time in on the arc, he was trying to trying to keep everyone alive or the majority, and so. It was for the greater good, sacrificing a few for the many.
Which he brought up.
Which he brought up and has continued to bring up. And it's kind of a theme on the show, it's that moral compass again that Jason and our writers like to throw in your face, and it's it creates controversy. What would you do? Would you do this? Would you do that? Would you save your loved one if it meant many more people dying, or would you sacrifice your loved one if it meant saving hundreds?
This is
something that touches you here as well as mm-hmm. as here, the head or heart, which do you follow? And unfortunately for Jaha, you see it affects him,
mm-hmm.
It, years later or however long it's been, it affects him. He said himself he remembers every single one, but it's something he had to do.
Yeah, but even if he says that, he was like the chancellor. Like,
that's like, he doesn't
really care.
What would he say? What would he say?
He doesn't care about any of us. He didn't say that, but I'm judging you on your action.
I'm just drinking vodka here, guys. That guy's a
this
dick.
Is good.
I'm
like, stuff. I don't think this is water.
We have water. I don't know where you guys found
we
the vodka.
We got vodka over this side. It's good.
So the end of this first little bit is that we have Octavia and Indra there's a little bit of a team up after like one of the more badass
which is awesome.
Fights we've seen right. on this show ever. She challenges a grounder in a training.
Can I just say that that was possibly one of the worst nights of weather in the whole shoot.
I was going to ask about that. I said I was going to wonder if it was actual weather.
Like,
or if it was
they worked
man-made.
Into the night, into the early hours of the morning, and the it's weather pouring. Was horrendous. And that scene was a lot longer as well. That was cut down for compliance and censorship and all that business.
Really? Wow.
That was a really long scene, and they worked on that with our great stunt choreographer, Marshall Kim. Just literally just worked it. They rehearsed, and the weather kicked their butts, you know? But for myself, I think it just added, you know? We're very fortunate that the weather adds, like, it's like a new, it's another character on the show. And the worse the weather is, the more epic the show looks. And I think that scene would still look incredible. But just that whole mud, rain, and terrible conditions, it just made Octavia just look like, you know, she was getting her butt handed to her. And she was, you know. And we're seeing her journey, you know, come from that, we're back, bitches! Yeah. You know, a spoiled schoolgirl to you know, this little warrior that she's becoming. You know, she's now almost officially Indra's second, you know. And this is, this, as Lincoln said in the show, you know, he saw this strength. She was already strong.
Yeah,
Lincoln's just been, you know, fortunate enough to be able to help coerce that out, and she's becoming the person that she always was.
Yeah, it's coerce. Not, well, yeah. You know, okay.
We talked at length when we saw the Clark Lexa fight earlier in the season that was like, we were like, can you think of another time you've ever seen two women in a primetime or like network show just going at it like that, like just fists, like on the ground, like just, and I couldn't think of one example. I can't think of the last time I saw a girl and a guy go at it, like just straight up girl on the ground getting kicked in the stomach. Like, that's intense stuff. And I had this moment where I was thinking, oh man, like they're going to make her really strong and she's going to kick this guy's butt. And I was like, this is going to be so stupid. She weighs like a third of
I was not thinking that at all. Yeah. I was like, she's going to get her ass handed to her.
She takes the first hit, she's on the ground, and then she rises up. You're like, oh, she's going to get him, or she's going to stab him. But then she just gets the snot kicked out of her.
No.
And you're like, oh, that's
it's real.
It's classic. Yeah.
It's totally real.
Yeah. Like, training respect moment.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. I was like, she was going to get pushed into the dirt and Indra's going to be like, alright, okay.
It's awesome, and that's where the CW's going, you know, we're keeping it real and we're allowed to go, you know, go down those dark paths and you know, Octavia's journey is incredible.
It
really is fantastic.
Really,
you know, you're kind of seeing her and Lincoln come from either end of the spectrum to trying, basically we're meeting in the middle where Lincoln's becoming more acclimatized to the Arkas and you know, she's learning more ways of the grounders to be kind of, you know, they're taking the best parts of each culture and, you know, almost kind of, you know, Jason's always put it as that we're the bridge between the two worlds.
Yeah, yes. I was just thinking that.
So if these two can, you know, work together, then, it, you know, maybe there's hope for the whole people.
I also love the Bellamy big brother to the boyfriend talk. I loved that. I was like,
Belkin.
me and Bob were really happy with that. You know, we've worked with each other before, but obviously, you know, it's something that we've been wanting to do. You know, when they ask, you know, who do you want to work with more and stuff, and in season one, you know, he was kicking my butt when I was being tortured, and we had a lot of fun on set.
I forgot all about that.
You know, I mean, Lincoln, he's over it. You know, he's had worse scars, but it's good to see, you know, more dynamics coming to the forefront, and you're seeing, you know, a little bit of backstory for Lincoln and that respect, and again more of a journey from Bellamy and Lincoln where they first started, where they were kind of opposite ends. You know, Bellamy's seen that passion in Octavia when she was hunting for Lincoln, when he was being captured several times, that you know, she hunted him down. She was passionate about him. She saw how much she cared about him, how willing and how far she was willing to go to get him back. And then he's seen, obviously, Lincoln's view of Octavia as well, and how passionate and strong that he's been, and you know, willing to go against his own people. Mm-hmm. You know, he's seen that love is real now. Not sure how friendly he'll be after that ending, but you know, it's again, like I say, it's the writers keeping it real. You know, although I'm not too sure what Lincoln and Bellamy could have done otherwise,
right.
because the whole plan was basically, you know, grab the red. He'll sneak in the door. Lincoln will kill everyone. You get in the door, but the door was closed straight away. So we didn't really have a plan B.
Right.
We didn't think that far. We were like, sweet, we'll just, you know, I'll kill everyone. You run in the door. We'll sort this.
Matt made a gun. This decision.
Yeah, exactly.
Door shut straight away. We're like, well, that was awkward.
Yeah, right.
Escalated quickly.
I mean, Tari called out, I think, like episode one or two of this season. He was like,
genius.
Because I was like, wow, this is really interesting. Because at the very beginning of the season, I was like, man, what's the point of the Octavia Lincoln storyline? I was like, this is a romance thing. I was like, this doesn't fit. I was like, I don't understand what they're doing. And Tari was like, well, she's going to stick around because she's going to bridge the gap between the grounders and the people. And that's
this guy.
Well, yeah. I mean,
nailed it.
I think what you're saying is they were being underutilized. Like, they were towards the background, and they're fan favorites and stuff.
Yes.
And so it made sense because they are having that Venn diagram of, like, he's learning their culture and she's learning the grounder culture. So it only makes sense that if they're all going to work together, this Romeo and Juliet, Beauty and the Beast relationship would be the means to do it.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah.
Very well said. I can't even think of anything else. I definitely, before we keep going with anything else, I definitely want to bring up Clark because that whole story section with, how do you pronounce it?
It's
Pona?
Ponya.
Yeah.
Pona.
Pona?
Pona.
Okay. Pona.
The lost monster reincarnated.
Pretty much.
Mighty Joe Young.
Because I just want to know, I don't know if the fans were expecting it, but I was not expecting it to be a gorilla. I wanted it to be like a puma or a lion or something.
Like savage knuckle blade beast.
Yeah, right. Something, you know. Nice. But, I mean... Yeah, because, I mean, after all that, I was thinking, like, something just extremely ferocious, which, again, a gorilla can be, but it just...
I mean, was the gorilla not ferocious?
No, it was
the scariest thing in the world.
That
jumped, like, 50 meters in the air.
Yeah.
And like, was 12 bullets in the dome and survived.
Yeah.
And I'll just let it say no animals were hurt in the filming of this episode.
But, like, it was just... Yeah, the more you know. But it was just strange how that whole thing was handled, but we should probably talk about it.
A little behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's all right. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
This was actually an idea from the boss man, Mark Pedowitz.
Really?
He said to Jason, our producer, you know what people like? Animals. I don't know if he did it like that with a wink and the gun.
I'm gonna remember that forever.
But I'm thinking he was just in his office. You know, he's a great guy. He's awesome. I love him. But he was just like the Godfather. People like animals.
Jason's like, I'm in.
So he went back to the writers and you know, I think they played with lots of various things, and then our incredible FX team, Zoic, and our sound team, you know, Charlie Crutcher and everyone at Warner, came up with this incredible, you know, visual. Yeah. They won an Emmy nomination last year for season one, and you know how they didn't get nominated this year because they really are pulling out incredible work on TV budgets. You know, I mean, this isn't, you know, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes where we've got millions to spare.
Yeah.
You know, we're knocking out a TV show on a much smaller budget, and what they are creating in post was incredible. And all fair play to Alicia and Eliza for running around and staring at a big screen, and our director Dean White just going, he's coming after you. He's grabbing your leg. He's grabbing your leg. I mean, Dean White's scared. We should have just put him in a big green monkey suit or whatever, because he's a huge. He's a great guy. He's our director and a producer, and you know, he's so passionate and he's fantastic. And he really would have helped more than I think any other director in those moments. But
yeah.
I mean, it's tough to work against nothing, you know. Just, and you're just playing with your imagination. It's like, imagine it's like King Kong. It's a huge monkey, ape, gorilla thing, and he's coming at you. I'll be like, okay.
Yeah.
But you know, Eliza killed it. You know, Alicia killed it, and the Clark and Alexa storyline was fantastic.
That was awesome.
Well, so before they find the monkey.
This whole thing.
Gorilla. Ape. Silverback. If it was a monkey, they could have been friends. Could have been like...
Ancient silverback. Like, we open...
My word.
we open up in... I mean, I guess they're in some sort of like a war
bunker.
It's
a strategy meeting. So they're having a strategy meeting, and one of the grounders, Quinn, is very hostile towards Clark. We find out that his brother was killed in the Ring of Fire.
I love
consistency. Writers dropping Easter eggs, going back to the season one. Love that.
Yeah.
Sorry,
no,
carry on.
No, it's
I'm
true.
Just picking up my piece.
Call the callback.
But yeah, and so he goes out because he can't do the alliance. Clark goes out to get some air because she still feels guilty about it. Mm-hmm. And then he tries to kill the crap out of her.
Kill the crap out of her.
No, that's literally what that was.
Yeah, I like that.
And in the midst, we find Burn yeah. is dead.
With her arm torn off.
Her arm ripped off.
Just gnarly.
If you guys were in the viewing room with me, I was just like, ah, what?
It was hilarious. It was Your reaction was wonderful.
I was just sitting there going, there's going to be an arrow, maybe like a few.
She might have a dagger in her.
My gosh, he's got no arm.
That was literally what it was. And it scared me because, you know, from first season, we always talk about this. I'm just like, random spear. That's what I was hoping. And no, her arm was completely off. And I was just like, I can't.
It was sweet. It's really awesome.
Best way to do
that. It was gory and gnarly. It's surprising to all of us.
Every time. You guys are awesome.
Oh, yeah.
So, strategy meeting, and she's scared. This guy's chasing her. And I just want to say the first thing I noticed, and this is like uber nerd moment.
Oh, no.
But it opens up, and she's like, Clark's talking to Alexa, and she says something like, such and such, Commander. She calls her Commander.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, for me, it just like invoked all these like sweet war movies, war and like, you know, wars in jungles and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. She's never called her Commander. She usually calls her Alexa.
Yeah.
You were such a dork.
She called her Commander. And it's free. I was like, oh, this. And I was like, God, the war tone here is just awesome. I see him go to war. I was like, the bunker, the strategy, and we have to get in. I don't know. I was totally into it. I'm on board.
Is it weird that the first thing I thought of when I saw their strategy, I was like, man, I haven't played Risk in such a long time.
It's weird because she's
actually what they were playing. Oh my gosh. They didn't even start thinking about the Mountain Men. They were just playing Risk, you know, and
I got Europe.
Quinn got upset. He was like, I'm losing again.
Risk.
That
would be amazing.
I mean, merchandising right there.
Yeah. Ever. Get on it right now.
Consumer products. Get on that.
You thought of Risk. It's funny. I immediately thought of Admiral Akbar. Like,
it's because it's a trap.
It's a trap.
It's a trap.
It's a trap.
Star Wars.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah, I know.
I'm that's why I was like, you're such a dork. Oh my word.
But anyways, there's a giant ape chasing them. We find out. So they all get trapped in this, what we realize is an old zoo.
Which he pointed out that I didn't even see that it says zoo on the rock right in front, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I completely missed that.
Right, towards the beginning when they find themselves in the arena. You can see if you look carefully. I'm sure our fans spotted it.
Probably.
I don't know whether it said the actual name of the zoo, but it said something zoo. Whether it was something state zoo or the actual place, but
I really hope it's a state zoo because I want to know where they are. Really, I mean, I know that they shoot in Canada, but I want to know so bad.
Well, I mean, there's you know, my village, Lincoln's village, is Tondisi, and we all know what that's from.
Do we?
Enlighten us.
I was like, wait a minute.
Well, there was a signpost in the previous episode that they walked past.
What?
With the front scribbled off.
What? All right, everybody, rewatch that episode. I know that somebody, the Lincoln Memorial was there.
Yeah, I knew that.
Just drop some knowledge.
And we know that it's on the East Coast.
So, yeah, I knew it was on the East Coast.
I don't know if it was burnt out or something, but, I mean, that's Washington, D.C.,
oh,
right?
My God. My mind.
So, the only thing left is Ton, D.C.
Nice.
See, they're dropped.
That's amazing.
Genius, right?
Well, you said Ton, D.C. I was thinking like T-U-N-D-I-S-I.
But that's how the grounders pronounce it, because that's all we know.
Ton, D.C.
Like this lovely
place, D.C. Ton, D.C. I gotta say more like Lincoln.
Yeah, there you go.
Speaking of DC.
Are you able to do like you go between the two accents like flawlessly like that?
I mean, I wouldn't say I was flawless, but I can kind of do something with it.
You can go back and forth. Yeah.
I mean, shall I do the rest of it like this or
No.
To the British, to the British.
Hello, lovely. Mary Poppins.
Oh, no, that just makes
it
worse.
I would say for our listeners, they're like, that ain't him.
Yeah, just now, I love like, that.
No.
That's him.
That's him.
That's the guy.
There's a monster in all of us, Clark.
Yeah, there you go.
There, proof, guys. Right there.
So Burn gets her arm ripped off, and we have We have Pauna chasing them through the woods, and then Lex is just ruthless, and she's just...
Yeah, she kills Quinn.
Well, no, not completely. She sliced the back of his leg. And left him to die.
Sacrifices him so that they can get away. Again, it's every woman, man for himself.
Yeah, it was like a Walking Dead moment. Just like, zombie bait.
Survival of the fittest, if you will.
So they kind of tease at the end of this whole thing. They get away from the ape. And they tease for a second. She says, you know, there's a reincarnation aspect here. Lexa says to Clark,
yes.
You know, once I die, my spirit will find the next commander. And they tease you for a second. We all have the same thought. Oh, Clark's going to be the next commander of the Grounders, right? It's kind of a stretch. But then, we already talked about Octavia. They really get into, like, it's probably actually going to be Octavia. And maybe we're supposed to wonder, but I think it's got to be Octavia. It makes way more sense than
Clark,
right?
I can't really see Clark becoming the new commander. I mean, I feel like she fits the bill, but I personally can't see it.
Yeah.
You know, I can definitely see Octavia after what she's gone through and how much she's grown as a character. You know, I can see it. I'm hoping Lincoln will get through it and they could be together.
Right.
But that's just me wishful thinking.
Do you think Marie has the like chops and strength to like lead the Grounders in the show? Like be that strong?
Marie is one of the most incredible women you will ever meet.
Really?
She is completely conflicting against her appearance. She is this tiny, beautiful little thing. She's fantastic, and yet she rides Harleys, horses.
Wow.
She does most of her own stunts. She kicks butt. The first time we ever met, she was 2 hours face down in the dirt for our original meet when
That's
Lincoln's
right.
on the top of the hill after she falls down the cliff. And you know, I saw like a rat or something like run past her head, and I was like, Marie, that's
it's a rat.
She's like, oh yeah, I saw it run past earlier. I'm like, she's so badass. But that's Marie, you know. She's so hardcore, and I think, you know, it really comes out in her performance as Octavia. She's, you know, she's kicking ass and taking names, and you know, she was there for hours, you know, like I say, doing that scene, doing that whole fight scene, and really going through it. You know, her body is in pieces, the bruises and stuff that she gets from really putting herself through. I mean, all the cast do, you know.
Yeah.
You know, from Bob, Eliza, everyone. You know, but Marie has definitely got the chops to do whatever she wants to do, whether it be Lincoln's Juliet, or whether it be Leader of the Grounders, or whether it be, you know, something else.
Sure.
You know, I mean, whatever you think she can do, she will do it.
Well, I've been very excited.
She's an incredible girl.
I've been very excited about the development of both the two of your characters this season. And I mentioned it last week and the week before. Just like I said at the beginning of the season, I was sort of like, what's the purpose? And then I've liked how, even though your relationship hasn't gotten more screen time since the beginning, the significance of it has... It's much more weighted. Like when you guys have scenes together, or they'll talk to her, they'll talk to you. It's like every time, like, oh, this matters. This is a part of the plot that I care about now. And you've become like two of the better characters, I think, this season.
Yeah,
I agree.
They're pretty much there to kind of explain a lot of stuff. Like I feel Lincoln is kind of like your only way of finding things out. In season one, it like only he would know about Joby Nuts turning, you know, giving people, you know, illusions and things like that. So, you know, through Lincoln, you're able to find out. Even with Finn, you know, it was only through Lincoln that you would know what was going to happen to him, what the Grounders were going to do. You know, and then with Octavia, you know, it was kind of her turn today to say, you know, Grounders aren't allowed to touch guns because the Mountain Men will wipe out the village. You know, so we're very much explanatory characters sometimes, but you know, we are more than that, and we have, you know. It obviously storylines kind of vary and go their separate ways, and they kind of they're liquid, you know. They don't just stay on course. It depends on how the writers are going and where they tend to drift off to. But I love my scenes with Marie, and I think any scenes with Octavia and Lincoln together, they do have that great chemistry and that real love. You know, Jason says it's the one real relationship in the show that's romantic.
Yeah.
You know, and you've seen them making immense sacrifices for each other constantly, and they will continue to. But you know, I've always said it. The great thing about our writers is that, you know, they give the audience what they need and not what they want.
Yeah,
and everyone wants Linktavia to be together. So what are they going to do? They're going to split them up.
Yep.
You know, they're going to constantly separate them, give them both, you know, vicious, dark journeys, and, you know, just watch them kind of try and forge their way back to each other.
But they're giving us depth when you're separated, which is just going to make it when you do find each other again in the show, that moment, as well as being posted on every social media platform in the world yes. a million times, is going to be a big moment. And I think they're trying to weight it that way.
Well, season one, all our scenes were together.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You never saw Lincoln without Octavia. You know, and then season two, you know, we have been separated, and we've, you know, like you say, they have built that depth and those layers individually. So that when they do come together, you know more about them, and you know that their passion is there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I would like to ask.
You go for it.
Because you've mentioned Dark Journeys. Uh-huh. So when you were reading the script and you found out that you were essentially going to become a futuristic heroin addict,
like, yes.
what were your thoughts in that regard?
I was told at San Diego Comic-Con by Jason Rothenberg, and I was excited, you know. It's an honor to play something so real, and you want to do it justice. And like I said before, it's a real problem. It's sci-fi, but and we have creative artistic license and stuff, but this is something that's real, and I had to go and do my research, and I watched films, I watched documentaries, heartbreaking documentaries about the struggle, you know, being real. And like I say, you have a strong, true, pure character like Lincoln, who can just turn. I watched many documentaries where, you know, you've got successful businessmen, you've got honest, good people, you've got religious people, you've got all people from all walks of life succumbing to this addiction that they just cannot stop. Without help and those support groups, and you know, it's something that our writers have maintained on the show and tried to keep it as true as possible. And like I said before, hopefully it does raise awareness that, you know, those struggles are real, and if there are people out there, you know, suffering, that, you know, they shouldn't be ashamed. They should try and find help. They should find people who can help them and find those support groups and you know, work through it together, because it will not just go away.
Right.
It's not something that you can just get over, you know. And so, you know, with Lincoln, it's not something that he just got over. It's something that when I spoke to Jason, we agreed this is something he will fight in season 10 if he survived. You know, if he walks past a syringe with red in it, he would have to think twice about walking past. It wouldn't just be like, no. There's the drug. You know, it's something that he would have to think about. And so, you know, I was very blessed to have that kind of really dark storyline. In season one, it was very much a physical torture that Lincoln went through with Bellamy and Raven. Season two is very much an emotional torture for many of the characters this season. I think the first season was all about the physical dangers that they faced on Earth and what could harm them, whether it be the weather, whether it be the grounders, or even animals. And then season two, you know, I think everyone's kind of going through this dark,
right.
you know, moment, you know, with Raven and her injuries and, you know, Bellamy, everyone's going through their inner demons.
Sure.
And it's very interesting that, you know, the writers are keeping it fresh every season.
So for a quick refresher, what happens here is that we open up and we have the bro moment where Lincoln is talking to Bellamy, and he's, you know, the interaction, my sister, how did you know? You saved her life. You'd never met her. She was strong and all this, and they go through the woods, and then obviously they get in with this plan that goes haywire. This is where we see the tragic scene we're referring to, where Lincoln essentially relapses and gets injected with red heroin or whatever it is at the last moment of the episode. So this was the realest ending, like real in the sense of like heaviest ending of an episode so far, for mm-hmm. sure. It definitely, that the parallel with real life was like, oh my God.
Like, I feel like a majority, like ever since the Finn's death, I feel like it's been always kind of, there's this like this lingering heavy, you know, tone since then, because we had to deal with, you know, Finn dying obviously, and then obviously dealing with Clark's guilt and how it was tormenting her from inside out, and then now we're dealing with Lincoln. So I feel like I've always liked the fact that the writers can just keep you on your toes, and I did notice that the first season it was mostly just kind of dealing with just the environment and a couple other things. And then this whole season of season two is just like ripping at your heartstrings the whole time.
Yeah. Well, I love the story too about when the man fell to earth and Lincoln fed him for 3 days as a boy and then he has to kill him. It was like, again, that's what we're talking about. They're giving depth to these characters that we didn't have before. And it's just making, it made that decision at the end that he makes so much more weighted. You know the character more. Mm-hmm. So that's got to be a lot of fun for you. That they're even though you know the stories, I'm sure the early scripts and the descriptions are a little more clear to you, but they haven't put it all on paper necessarily in an episode.
Yeah, I mean we do know a lot more than is actually shown on screen.
Right.
Even various storylines throughout season one that didn't make it to script or never made it to air. You know, even in this episode, there was various scenes cut. With information or action or whatever for various reasons. I mean, not just performance or storyline wise. There's all sorts of things going on. So we do know a lot, and I've spoken to Jason about, you know, Lincoln's background, and you kind of come up with a character with, and you kind of, until you're given these, you know, nuggets of information, you kind of create your own world. You create your own storyline so that you can give yourself that depth.
Right.
And you know, why am I... Which is why our so-called villains have their own perspective. No one's evil in our show. You know, the Mountain Men are really just trying to save their own people. And the way they're going about it is not necessarily, you know, the nicest way. You know, they're sacrificing someone else. But, I mean, like I said, with Jaha, they're sacrificing 48 people to save their whole colony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so for them, that's not much of a sacrifice. The way they're doing it is kind of barbaric and draining people's blood and things. It's not great, but they're just doing it for, you know, and survival. That's what those actors are working towards. You know, they're not just, oh, I'm the bad guy, I'm going to play it really bad. It's like, no, I have a purpose. I'm going to save my people. So Dante, so Cage, you know, I'm going to save my people. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm torturing you. That's why I'm putting you through this. That's why I need Lincoln to become a Reaper, to protect me while I do this, so that my people can then go to Earth and walk across, you know, green fields and breathe the air. Mm-hmm. You know, and once again, it's just our writers and Jason, you know, creating those layers, that depth.
Sure.
That you'll see continue throughout this season as well.
So I think I'd like to get to some of these fan questions. We tweeted out earlier to the fans and asked them, you know, I think my question is, what would you do if you were sitting next to Ricky Whittle?
I saw some of those. They're very rude.
I think some of them were like, can I have a foot massage? Have you ever drank liquor out of a shoe? Like, there was...
What?
Yes and yes.
What do you like for breakfast? But we're not going to do those ones. We're going to do some of these ones over
Chocolate.
Here.
Chocolate.
Yeah. Lightning round them.
So, yeah, real quick. So
lightning round.
At Danik Boo wanted to know, who is your favorite actor or actress to work with in the show so far? And do you have a favorite scene you filmed?
Oh, that was one of my questions.
Love working with Marie. loved working with Bob in this. My favorite scene.
On the spot, man.
I know, it's tough. I'd go to season one, and it was the scene where Lincoln first spoke.
Yes.
That's a good scene.
I love
Where I held Octavia's hand and I spoke. As an actor, sometimes you have these moments where the world disappears. And that day, I just remember, you know, the DOP had lit it fantastically, and it was so dark, and it was just myself, Marie, Jared were in the room, and Eliza, her character just left, and it was just a moment, and Marie's acting was incredible. I mean, it's always incredible, but that day, you know, she just looked deep into my soul, and you know, I just felt Lincoln there, and it was just a great scene for me. You know, just listening to her and then feeling, you know, what my character had been through. And then he finally speaks, you know, and lets it the cat out of the bag that I understood everything.
Awesome. So at JazzyB1999 wants to know...
JazzyB?
Yeah, okay, there you go, yeah. If you were offered a professional soccer role, would you take it? Yeah.
I'm British.
People don't know. He was really good when he was young.
I was like, no.
Football, soccer is... It was a passion when I was younger. It was something that I love, and I wake up at 4 a.m. because of the time difference to watch the English Premiership. So, you know, every Saturday morning, Sunday morning, I'm up at 4 a.m., 7 a.m. and 9 a.m., I think, at different kickoffs. That time has passed. My legs probably wouldn't be able to take it right now. The 100's hard enough. You know, filming that show is physical right. enough, you know. So
sure.
I found a new love in acting, and that's something that I'm going to continue.
Okay.
That's good.
Speaking of your loves, Audrey La 0334 wants to know, have you ever thought about dating a fan? Insists that it's not her asking.
Sure. I'm asking yeah. for sure. Okay, yeah, I'm asking for a friend.
She's asking for a friend. I read all my tweets. Every single one
this
of them.
This guy.
And you are beautiful people. You are really beautiful people. So, yes, of course. You know, it's not about who you are, what you are, or anything like that. It's, you know, if you've got a connection, you've got a connection.
All right.
Every single fangirl right now is swooning. Right? I bet I could put money down right now. Every single fangirl that's watching us right now is like,
find a connection.
Find a connection. Okay. If we meet up,
do you have one more?
My last one. Okay. Real quick, Marisol 1238. She actually asked what superhero would you play, but I asked you that in the other interview, so that's somewhere else. White or dark chocolate? I don't think it's a metaphor. I think it's legitimate. It's just a white or dark chocolate. Which do you prefer?
Ooh.
I love dark chocolate.
Dang
yeah.
And especially because somewhere out there, they insist that it's healthy for you.
Yeah.
Somewhere out there.
I'm just being good to my body. Chocolate for breakfast. Yeah. Chocolate for lunch. Chocolate for dinner. I'm eating 3 healthy meals a day. You're welcome.
Okay, I have 3 questions, come and yeah. then we can go into predictions, because I want to know what your guys' predictions after yeah. seeing that preview. One, was it hard to learn the grounder language?
Yes. David J. Peterson is an incredible genius who worked on Game of Thrones, and he created an incredible language that is real. It's not just gobbledygook, and so you kind of want to do that justice. Adina, who plays Indra, is incredible at it.
Yeah, I was listening
Alicia
to it.
Alicia, plays Lexa, mm-hmm. also has a lot to do. So it's tough, but we get through it.
I mean, I have so many questions.
Pick your best ones.
I know, I'm trying.
Okay, I'll keep them short. Wait, do them all.
No, it's okay. How did you prepare for the Reaper role, since it was such a different experience acting wise than Lincoln is?
The Reaper role was a compromise, to be honest. I wanted to keep it very real and very raw, and wanted to keep Lincoln there. Mm-hmm. And the powers that be decided that they wanted Lincoln to be gone, and they wanted just pure animalistic monster. So he was a compromise from both camps, and that's how he was created.
That's awesome, because I remember we were talking on the after show where it was like, oh, there goes Lincoln eating a guy.
it was tough. I've still got scars from straining at those chains and things like that. That was again a lot more research again on various things.
I think one of my predictions was that you were going to eat Octavia. The fans didn't like that one very much.
They were so mad at you, and I was like, whoa, it's just a prediction, relax. Yeah. Last two, most embarrassing moment on set, either for you or someone else.
There's a lot. 2 quick ones. episode 1, season 2. I literally pulled my hamstring the very first take, the very first shot of the very first day on season 1, and my hamstring was in agony. So all those action scenes where Lincoln was running through the water to try and save Octavia when he heard a scream, I was in absolute agony.
Oh, no.
Absolute agony. And we shot it in lots of various different things. And then there's a bit where I run off and didn't even make the show, where I say, look, I'll be back. I'm going to go and get some bugs for you to eat or whatever. And as I run off, I'm running through the water. And just as I ran past camera, I fell flat on my face, completely submerged under the water.
Oh,
I was
geez.
Gone. And they didn't even catch it on camera, so it's not even in the bloopers. So, but it was a hot day, so I felt good. And then I shot a scene with Marie. And we were walking along, and the camera was right on us, and we were being really like stoic and really powerful. You know, she's a warrior princess, and I'm Lincoln, and she stacked it. She tripped up, and she was like, and she held it. She was professional, but I was just like, we've got to go again. I couldn't hold it. I'm a schoolgirl. Once we start getting the giggles on set,
it's hard to hear them.
Do you guys get the giggles a lot?
Henry Ian Cusack is a child. He plays Kane so straight, so powerful, and he's such a well-respected, talented actor. He is one of the funniest people you've ever met.
Nice.
Incredible.
Good to know.
We have a lot of laughs on set, you know, whether it be Devin Bostick and Chris Larkin to Richard Harmon, you know, plays Murphy. He's funny. He's hilarious. Sachin, Jared, everyone's hilarious. I'm trying to name the whole cast, basically, just because I want to get everyone out.
It's like an Oscar Sachin speech.
Paige is hilarious. You know, everyone's in there, you know. So it really is a great family, and I'm very blessed to be a part of this.
So last question before we go to predictions is... what's it going to take to get Lindsay Morgan on the show?
Oh, I knew he was going to ask that. Man. I mean, I'll
write an album.
I think it might take an album.
Yeah.
If you write an album, and I mean, I think she's still in Canada at the moment. But when she comes down, I have no doubts that she'll be popping in.
Yay. I hope so.
Yeah.
That is another woman who is just beyond words. I mean, she's a beautiful girl. She's talented.
Mm.
And I think girls around the world are just like, I just hope she's got bad breath or she's horrible. No, the most annoying thing is she's incredible. She has a great personality. She's funny. She's hilarious. She's a joker. She's got the whole cast saying, y'all. Because she's from Texas or whatever. Nice.
I didn't know that.
That's now in my vocab. I constantly say, y'all don't even know. Did I just say y'all? Damn you, Lindsay! Yeah, so she's an incredible girl. And hopefully you do get to get her into the studio, because that'll be fun.
Well, we love Raven. We're going to keep trying.
She's a ball of energy, an absolute ball of energy. And I've got nothing but good words.
Should we predict some things? Do you
want to
go first?
I
want to predict.
I love the flashing lights.
Hey guys, quick round of predictions. Ben.
Yeah, you're going to have to go first, Ben, because I can't think of anything right now.
I'm going to say two. Number one is going to be Bellamy's not going to die. They show him strung up. There's no chance they're going to kill Bellamy. There's just not even 1%, in my opinion. And then the other prediction would probably have to be that Lexa will die before the end of the season and Octavia will take over as the warrior princess.
Nice.
Though it's going to kill me because I absolutely love Lexa now.
Yeah, I'm on the same boat. I feel like Lexa's going to die within the end of the season, and either Octavia or someone's going to end up taking her role. Or there's going to be an all-out war because they're like, no, she's gone, and someone else wants... Because I feel like Indra's probably going to be...
Lincoln doesn't even get a look here.
I haven't gotten there yet. I'm not there yet. But no, I feel like Indra, after having Octavia as her right hand, you know, I feel like she's going to be like, that's fine. I think Octavia could do it. And I feel like the Grounders are going to be really upset of having a sky person as their commander. And I'm rooting for Lincoln to get back out, get back into rehab, be with Octavia, and have beautiful little grounder babies together. Done. Nice.
Groundlings.
There.
That's awesome. I mean, now that you mention Lincoln being a compromise, or Grounder Lincoln being... Reaper Lincoln being a compromise, now I think that he's going to keep somewhat of his senses. He's going to go back to the camp, let everyone know what happened, and it's going to be a big ordeal.
Yeah.
Also that Monty and Jasper are going to save Bellamy.
Yes.
That's going to be a
thing. Yeah, because they're going to find out about it.
Right.
So,
Ricky, anything you could tell us?
I just want to say you guys are not ready for what's going to happen.
Say that.
It is incredible. And I think Lincoln's going to develop superpowers, and you're going to find out that he can fly and he has super
strength. Oh my gosh.
Because of the radiation of Earth, and yeah, he's going to be a superhero.
I had the greatest idea.
Nice.
They should have a red drink and call it the Flying Lincoln. Done.
Ooh.
Let's totally make that.
We're hitting the bar after this.
All right. Well, now that predictions are done, that'll wrap us up. I know.
I don't want to go.
You don't need to.
I don't want
to
go.
You can just be part of the panel forever.
Can I stay? The couch looks cozy. It looks cozy. I can stay. Can I see you next week?
Yes.
I'll bring Lindsay.
dude. You're welcome anyway.
You go red as soon as I say her name.
I didn't say
you're going to have to put her on that side of the table.
Oh my god, this is ridiculous.
I
respect her professionally, okay?
Me too. You're so red.
We'd really like to thank Ricky Whittle for joining
us.
Thank you, man. Really, awesome pleasure.
And so tell our fans where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Ricky Whittle, or Instagram, just Ricky Whittle.
Awesome. And for the rest of you panelists, starting with Alexis.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at atorres890. That's A-T-O-R-R-E-S 890.
And Mr. Ben Bateman.
I am Ben Bateman Media across all platforms, Twitter, Instagram, the whole bit.
Follow these people. They're awesome.
Nice. Thanks.
And you can find me on Twitter at TariJ. That's T-A-U-R-I-J-A-Y. Remember to like, subscribe, comment. It helps us get guests just like this great gentleman right here.
Yeah, seriously.
New best friend right here.
Oh, yeah.
Besties.
Thanks for listening, and stay grounded.
Thanks, Bye, guys.
Take care.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.